We got planes. We got automobiles. No trains, but we do have sparkling water from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 27th day of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The best-known airplane in the United States right now, probably the world too, really, is arguably the Boeing 737 MAX, known, however, as we all know, for the wrong reasons. You can add another reason today. The FAA says it found another different problem with the plane that'll delay its return to the air until the fall, at least. Airlines that fly the 737 MAX will feel this news the most schedule-wise, but Boeing's issues with this plane spread through the whole economy, from the companies that make up Boeing's massive supply chain to economic indicators like durable goods orders that we talk about from time to time, all the way down to your 401k savings. Marketplace's Jack Stewart gets us going.
Boeing's 737 MAX planes have been grounded globally after two fatal crashes in October and March. It was looking like Boeing was getting close to a fix. Then
we're getting late word tonight on the Boeing 737 MAX.
Federal Aviation Administration has identified a new potential risk.
Boeing shares dropping sharply this morning. That is having a big impact on the Dow futures overall.
Right now, Boeing is still building 42 737 MAXs a month, but nobody's taking delivery and few airlines are placing new orders. That's being linked to a drop in durable goods orders, a key economic indicator. And in a very real way, every plane that's parked is one that's not contributing to U.S. exports, says Dorna Rhodes at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University.
You can imagine how many cars, for example, that a GM would have to export just to equal one large commercial aircraft.
Around $100 million worth. The headlines also call out another economic indicator, the Dow Index. Boeing's stock has an outsized impact because of the unique way the index is structured, says analyst Michel Merlezou at Air Insight Research in Seattle, Washington.
Boeing stock has been one of the highest rated stocks and one of the most significant Dow Jones stock over the past few years, and therefore it carries a lot of weight on that trading.
If your 401k has been betting on Boeing, you'll be feeling that drop personally. David Primo at the University of Rochester says the FAA knows it's under scrutiny and will err on the side of caution when it comes to declaring the jet safe to fly. That sounds like good news for passengers.
But it's bad news if it means that they're so cautious that we have planes that aren't able to be in service, people are losing income. There are actually real costs to this.
In a statement, Boeing says it's working on the problem and won't ask for certification until it's sure it's safe to fly. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
The housing indicator of the day this Thursday is pending home sales, which the National Association of Realtors says improved slightly last month, meaning more homes were under contract in May than there were the month before. However, compared to the same month a year ago, pending sales saw their 17th down month in a row. One explanation? Rising home prices, because a separate report out today shows the median-priced house in a growing number of markets is out of reach for a typical family. As Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, it all depends on where you live.
First, the bad news if you're looking to buy a house. In about three-quarters of the counties tracked by the research firm Adam Data Solutions, a median-priced house would be unaffordable, or at least a stretch, for an average-wage household. Adam's Todd Tita says that's despite a decline in interest rates in the last few months.
Which, you know, intuitively improves affordability, and the fact that we're still seeing a lot of unaffordable areas, it does create concern for us.
Still, that leaves a quarter of markets affordable, including Houston, Detroit, and Philadelphia. Lawrence Yoon is chief economist with the National Association of Realtors.
Places like Memphis, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Louisville, Kentucky.
And even parts of New England, including Providence and Hartford.
These areas have seen a more affordable condition with prices not rising drastically.
Adam's report defines affordability as a household spending no more than 28% of its income on housing. Chris Thornburg with Beacon Economics says the share of households paying more than that has been falling for several years.
People have actually been using less and less of their income to support their housing needs.
And the home ownership rate has grown 2 years in a row. But nationally, house prices are still rising faster than wages, says Michael Neal with the Urban Institute, partly because new home construction construction isn't keeping up with demand.
The lower supply, particularly of affordable homes, is kind of leaving the average potential home buyer with less affordable options to choose from.
However you define affordability, analysts expect it to continue weighing on home sales. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Hey, any LaCroix fans out there? This one's for you. National Beverage, the company that owns the sparkling water brand, says sales fell last quarter for the second quarter in a row. LaCroix, of course, known for its trendy, brightly colored cans of flavored sparkling water and for being the leader in the growing seltzer market. Now, though, the company is facing a common problem. When you're successful, other companies will try to copy what you do, especially if what you do is easy to copy. Marketplace's Mariel Segura has that one.
Americans are really into seltzer now. They don't want to drink too much soda. And Jeff Kleinman at the trade publication BevNet says they're tired of plain old water.
They want to drink something that's got bubbles, something that's got flavor, as an alternative to just slugging tap water all day.
LaCroix has known this for a while. It was an early leader in the flavored seltzer market with its fancy flavors like cran raspberry and pamplemousse, that's French for grapefruit. But then other companies caught on, big ones like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Nestle, and small ones like Spindrift came up with their own flavored seltzers. Kleinman says it's an age-old challenge in business.
If you create a category, certainly other people are going to jump in. It's hard to maintain a complete hold on it.
This happened to Blue Apron, the meal service kit company, also to Red Bull, a pioneer of energy drinks. But being copied doesn't necessarily mean dying out. Red Bull, for instance, is still the market leader. These companies already have a head start. And John Stanton, who teaches food marketing at St. Joseph's University, says there is a way for them to stay at the top.
The trick is, if you're an innovator, you know, if you're first in the market with this, you've got to be first in the market in the next edition of this product.
It might be hard to innovate on water with bubbles, but he says LaCroix could do something simple, maybe introduce some exotic new flavors. I'm Mariel Segura for Marketplace.
Flavored is doing a lot of work there. That's all I'm saying. On Wall Street today, a moderately enthusiastic session. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There are rumblings, murmurings, if you will, of some kind of deal between the U.S. and China that'll put President Trump's next round of tariffs on hold again. More to come Saturday from Osaka, Japan, where the president and Chinese President Xi Jinping are supposed to meet on the sidelines of the G20. Up in the air, what'll happen with Huawei, the Chinese technology giant so much in the news of late? We, though, here on this program, are going to focus today not on the company and the U.S. sanctions it faces, but the city that created it, Shenzhen, on the far southern tip of China, just a stone's throw from Hong Kong. Shenzhen is sometimes called the Silicon Valley of China, which, aside from Huawei, has created a bunch of multi-billion dollar tech companies. Marketplace's Scott Tong is just back from Shenzhen, where optimists are hoping they will still be able to keep producing world-leading technology despite the trade war with America.
The world's top companies in telecom, drones, electric vehicles, iPhone making, all were born in Shenzhen, China. Now, one way to observe this booming tech city is to see it through the eyes of one of the entrepreneurs trying to make it here. I visit the office of Do No Kid, a software company with a program that pairs Chinese preschoolers with native-speaking teachers far away. Think FaceTime for language class. On one screen, a teacher in Spain sings and chats live with her student, a Chinese toddler named Elsa. Well, on the other screen, Elsa's mom tries to chase her down. She has crawled off screen. Duno founder Monica He grew up in China and studied linguistics at the University of Chicago. And then she picked Shenzhen as the most enticing place to start her venture.
After a lot of thinking, I thought, you know, Shenzhen is great. The government gave me a free office space. You know, as we stay here longer, we gradually discover the ecosystem here is quite good.
An ecosystem that has nurtured titans like Huawei, which the U.S. considers a national security threat, and Foxconn, which assembles your iPhone. What's in Shenzhen's ecosystem? Well, one element is government support.
We have gotten 400,000 RMB award from the Shenzhen government.
That's nearly 60 grand US. Shenzhen makes big bets on innovation, including green technology. By government decree, every cab here is electric, as is every public bus, which helped turn Shenzhen's startup automaker BYD into the world's largest electric vehicle company. Ecosystem factor number two is speed. In just 40 years, Shenzhen exploded from a fishing village to a tech giant. And at the center is a chaotic electronics market. It's called Huachangbei. In stall after stall, high-rise after high-rise, merchants hawk chipsets, finished computers, drones packed up the ship. There's a lot of packing tape here. You can shop for a surveillance camera, or buy a bootleg one, or design one yourself. David Lee runs Shenzhen's Open Innovation Lab.
Today, people estimated about 90% of the electronics used globally are produced in this one city.
He says Huachangbei began as an electronics outsourcing spot. But soon it became a tinkerer's haven for rapid innovation. One scrappy startup turned out a smartphone called Thunderstorm.
The Thunderstorm form has seven speakers, and it has the volume of a boombox.
It was made for construction workers. Lee calls this collision of geeks, parts, and ideas Shenzhen mashup.
It's a mashing up of what's out there and probing what's possible.
It is true that ideas get stolen here, so you have to move fast to stay ahead. Ecosystem element number three is location. Shenzhen is right by Hong Kong, which has more academic freedom than mainland China and better research, says Monica He.
In terms of multilingual research, I would say Hong Kong is a lot more advanced, so I can really access a lot more academic resources there.
Hong Kong research led to the founding of Shenzhen drone maker DJI. It's now the world's largest. Erwin Huang, a veteran of Apple, now at Hong Kong University of Science and Technology, says DJI's founder began his company at Huang's university.
So this guy, even though not good in studying, started creating his own drone and actually built a team that actually won the Japanese Robocon competition. So that's how he learned. His professor became his first investor.
It is stories like these that lured Monica He to Shenzhen, which to her measures up to Silicon Valley.
I've heard a lot of good things in other startup hubs like the Bay Area, but we believe this will be the next one.
The Chinese government thinks so. It has just given the Greater Shenzhen Hong Kong area an ambitious new name, the Greater Bay Area. In Shenzhen, China, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We'll see more of how the U.S.-China rivalry is going to play out once the G20 actually starts. As for who gets invited to that big meeting, it's got a pretty complicated history, and we will tell you all about it at Marketplace.org.
What happens over the weekend in Osaka may or may not get us to a tariff truce, but there is one thing we know for sure. For a whole lot of people in this economy, things have changed since the Trump administration began imposing tariffs for real a bit more than a year ago. And while you've heard from plenty of people on this program who've been affected, tariffs are a whole nother thing if your job is to help companies get imports into this country. Here you go.
My name is Gretchen Blau. I'm a licensed customs broker in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I work for Logistics Plus, and I file all the customs paperwork that's necessary to import goods into the United States. Here in Pennsylvania, my dad worked for the steel industry back in the 60s. There were frequently layoffs at that time because they were competing with foreign steel even back then. And his dad also worked in the steel industry, just, you know, working in the steel mills. So they would actually have to compete for the same job when they would call them back to work. My father basically said, I can't keep doing this. I need to find a different way to make a living. So this has been going on for a while. And it kind of seems like that it's a problem that's been ignored for a long, long time. So these... I don't know if you'd want to call them radical changes, but in trade policy are trying to make up for something that perhaps the government should have been watching all along. before these tariffs went into effect, I would go to networking events or whatnot and start to explain what I did. Oh, I'm a customs broker. And they'd say, well, what exactly do you do? And I'd start telling them. And I always had a short version because it's really more than anyone wanted to know. Their eyes would start glazing over. Now they start asking you a lot of questions about, you know, the trade policy. How does this affect me? How does this affect the country? Do you think this will accomplish what it's supposed to? That type of thing. Because they're seeing it on the news, and now all of a sudden they can relate to it much better. I always said my dream job would be a job where I could just sit around and read all day, but I didn't expect it to be the Federal Register and legal regulations like this. I wanted it to be fun stuff. But yeah, you need to be able to tell people stuff off the top of your head, and they kind of panic, so they want an answer quickly. Recently, I had to put in some flooring, and the gentleman that was doing it explained, well, if you pick this one, it's coming from China and the price will go up because of the tariffs, and then started explaining it to me. And I said, oh, I do this every day. I know what's going on with this. So, and then he started asking me questions so that he could better understand.
Gretchen Blau out of Erie, Pennsylvania. Coming up.
My awesome colleagues are perfectly able to address any queries.
Because sometimes you just need a break. But first, let's do the numbers. All right, here you go. Dow Industrials off 10 points today, less than a 10%, 26,526 on the blue chips. The NASDAQ rose 57 points, about 0.7%, 79.67. The S&P 500 up 11 points, 0.3%, 29.24. We talked about Boeing. Shares decelerated 2.9% today on the news of another glitch in that airplane. European aircraft maker Airbus lost 1.3%. Today, you remember Jack told you about the Dow and how it's calculated? Boeing is far and away the most expensive stock in the Dow. The Dow is price-weighted, so Boeing has a disproportionate impact. Would have been positive today, except not for a certain airplane company. Over in the packaged food aisle, ConAgra announces quarterly sales were off. The maker of Marie Callender's, Chef Boyardee, Libby's, and others melted down 12% today. Bonds rose, yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.01%. You're listening to Marketplace. And as we approach the end of Marketplace's budget year, we're doing some numbers of our own. Part of being a responsible news organization, especially one that covers business and the economy, is fiscal responsibility. And we've got a target we need to hit by June 30th. We are closing in on our goal of 2,500 Marketplace investors for this drive, but we still do need to hear from you. Even a gift of just $5 will make a difference. So please donate today at marketplace.org. And thanks. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. I don't know if you remember this, but Ford said back in May it was going to cut about 10% of its salaried workforce worldwide. A chunk of those layoffs were set to be in the carmaker's European operations. And today, Ford said that by the end of next year, it will have cut 12,000 jobs in Europe, salaried and blue collar. That's 20% of its employees there. It'll have closed 5 factories across the continent as well. The situation in Britain is especially bad. Thank you, Brexit. Nissan, Jaguar, Land Rover, and Honda have said they are going to cut back investment or close plants. And car production in the UK has now fallen for 12 straight months. And Ford, even before today's announcement, said it would shut down its 40-year-old engine factory in Bridgend, South Wales, next year and lay off all 1,700 people who work there. From the European desk, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that one.
Halfway between Cardiff and Swansea, this sprawling plant on the outskirts of Bridgend is the largest single employer in this town. Closure will be a terrific blow, not least to the 1,700 workers here.
It's massive for me because I've got a young family, I've got a mortgage.
47-year-old Jason Evans.
My lifestyle and my family's lifestyle has been dependent on my employment with Ford. So all of my plans and my family's plans and lifestyle at the moment is all up in the air and very, very uncertain.
Engine assembly staff here earn around $60,000 a year, double the local average. These are well-paying jobs, aren't they?
Yeah, they're very well-paid. And to try and find these sort of wages in this area is going to be very, very difficult.
Over the past decade, the Ford plant and its supply chain have pumped some $4 billion into the South Wales economy. Many local businesses are lamenting the plant closure. Jeremy Davies manages the Two Brewers pub. What's the closure going to mean for you?
Oh, it'll obviously damage the sales in the pub because obviously people are losing good pay jobs. It's going to have a knock-on effect on the sales of myself and any other retail business in the area which they use to spend their leisure time and spend their leisure money.
Everyone knew that some jobs were going at the plant, but there's shock and anger here that the whole plant is closing and all the jobs will be lost. Just listen to local lawmaker Madeline Moon.
I am shaking with anger, shaking with frustration. I'm just devastated.
And Welsh Economy Minister Ken Skates, furious at the decision, citing the $175 million in grants and subsidies the company has received over the years.
I'm incredibly angry with Ford. It comes in spite of the incredible investment that the taxpayers as a whole over many years have made in the site and the people employed here. And those people deserve better.
Ford says the plant has to go as part of the company's global cost-cutting drive. Bridge End, it says, is uneconomic compared with other plants making the same engine in India and Mexico. But local politicians and union officials say Ford should consider upgrading the plant to make electric cars and their components. Is that even possible? A question for Brian Godsell of the union Unite. That's not the American Unite. This one represents 1,300 workers at the plant. It could be retrofitted to produce components or electric cars.
Absolutely. It's a massive manufacturing plant and, it could be utilised to be the base for future technology work in the automotive sector in the UK.
Some local politicians believe that Brexit played a part in Ford's decision. That fear of tariffs and border delays between Britain and the EU convinced the company that Bridge End would not be viable. Ford denies that Brexit came into it. Car worker Jason Evans is not so sure.
Brexit, I would imagine, has played a part in that.
Did you vote for Brexit, Jason?
I did.
Are you regretting it now?
I think I'd still stand by my decision.
His co-worker, Andrew Pearson, thinks that Bridge End is just the latest British casualty in what he calls a perfect storm.
You know, we're facing Brexit, we're facing electrification, automation, and all these different things coming into the mix. One of them alone would be tough to take, but all of them all together, you know, it's extremely difficult.
Nevertheless, his union, Unite, is determined to fight the closure. It's threatened a strike, not just here, but at Ford's two other British factories as well, if the decision to scrap the Bridge End plant is not reversed. In Bridge End, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The good people at the Pew Research Center tell us that mothers spend around 14 hours a week caring for their children. If that child is a newborn, though, it is a full-time job, which is the relevant fact for today's installment of our occasional series, Automatic Reply. The creative ways that people say, I'm just not going to be able to respond to your email right away.
Hello. I am not out of the office for vacation, but because I have just birthed a human, which is the opposite of taking time off for fun. If your email truly is urgent and you need a response while I'm on maternity leave, kindly dial 911. Otherwise, my awesome colleagues are perfectly able to address any queries. Ciao!
And Arima Miller works in human resources at British American Tobacco. Got to tell you, since we started this series, by the way, which was only on Tuesday, lots of you have written in. We have read out-of-office emails that rhyme, a bunch referencing very specific vacation plans. Tequila was involved. That's all I'll say. A couple that include visual elements and at least one out-of-the-office trivia quiz. So please, tell us about an automatic reply you have seen at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, in which President Trump's tweets are about to get even more attention. Twitter said today it is adjusting its terms of service for basically the president of the United States. The company is going to put a warning label on abusive tweets from world leaders. Quote, the Twitter rules about abusive behavior apply to this tweet. However, the warning says, Twitter has determined it may be in the public's interest for the tweet to remain available, end of quote. So you'll have to click on it if you want to see it. As I said, just wait for the first time that happens. All right, we're going. Dow Industrials lost 10 points today, less than a tenth of 1%. Again, thank you, Boeing, price-weighted index. NASDAQ rose 57 points, about 0.7%. The S&P 500 up 11 points, about 0.3% there. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Heron Bekele, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Deirdre Depke. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.